Welcome to Drukhama Radio. For the sake of clarity, the person referred to as Raz in these podcasts is one of the main teachers of Drukhama teachings, referred to more commonly as Daishi, which simply means old teacher. We hope you enjoy this free content and find some of the material useful to enhance your life and the lives of those around you. Blessings.
Welcome back to Drukhama Radio, episode number 2. Again, we had the name changed. I'm thrilled, blessed again tonight to be joined by Raz. Raz, how are you doing, brother?
Doing very good. Thanks for having me. I'm glad to be here, and I'm excited about this interesting topic we have.
It is going to be interesting. May not be the most popular, but sometimes it's not what we want, it's what we need, right?
That's exactly right.
So we're going to start with the idea of karma, and I'm sure you can go for miles on that. We're going to move from that into karmic seeds, which is very interesting. And then from that, we're going to move to how practitioners sometimes get caught in the loop of trying to fit narratives to those karmic seeds or make those karmic seeds fit narratives that the ego wants. So in general, karma, can you talk a little bit about what that is and how that impacts us?
Sure. Like you said, it's a big subject. Everyone has their own idea about karma, but really karma just means a kind of action. And why is that word important? Because really what it's saying is that anytime we make any action, not just speech and physical action, but also emotional action, mental action, there's always a reaction. And karma is the tying together of the action reaction. So I step left, I must go right. I go up, I must come down. I go out, I must come in. There's always going to be that kind of rhythmic reaction to the action. And most of the spiritual traditions try to address this because as we do egoic action, in other words, action under the filter of unconsciousness, we get the repercussion or the reaction of the outside affecting us egoically on its own. So let me make it simpler here. The moment that I try to strive to grab something for me or for my needs, the moment that I try to reach out for something because I believe that it's what I need or what I want, the macrocosm, the world out there, does the same thing. It reacts to our action and it starts to pull. So as we're pulling, it's pulling away. And the trouble with this is that it's not easy to see. It's not apparent. So we may reach out and get something, but the macrocosm will reach out and grab something from us in a totally and entirely different way. And we have a very tough time connecting the two. So the structure is set up in a way that when I reach out to take, it's pulling out of my back pocket and I cannot make heads or tails of the two actions together. And I call it chaos. I just say, you know, the world's rough, it's tough, it's evil, it's mean. But in the world of the spiritual or mystical domain, it's really a science of when you reach out, it's going to reach into you. When you give out, it's going to give into you, and so on and so forth. So karma is your action and the reaction of the macrocosm against that flow, consistently and persistently happening over and over again in each moment of your life.
You talk about the opposite reaction, I suppose. I guess is the best way for me to say it. I want to know, dive a little bit into the karmic seed portion then, because that is different than obviously just the word karma. Talk about the roots of those or what they are in general.
So when it's a great follow-up because let's say this one car, I have to have it, I'm going to get it. And I reach out and try to get that car. I'm fighting for it. I'm working hard. I'm saving money. The car's in my sights. I need that car. And the reasons why I need that car, because I believe that it'll make me look younger, happier, healthier, wealthier. You know, I'm going to feel better in the car. I'm going to love driving it. All these things that I want about the car on a surface level seem to be apparent to me, the reasons why I want it. The underlying level, which isn't apparent to most people, is the insecurities and the fears. I need this car. My neighbors have better cars. I need to live up to what they are. I want to be a little bit above them. I want to look better to the opposite sex. I want to be more attractive. And it's kind of driven by fear. So really, the underlying problem is fear, and it has nothing to do with the car at all. It has nothing to do with me wanting the car, but we ignore that underlying problem or that instigation that's driving us toward what we want, and that generates what I like to call a karmic seed, meaning that it's a situation happening within that we are not either consciously facing or we're just refusing to look at. And the moment that we turn away or refuse to look at, or are unconscious to an internal issue, it becomes a seed which will germinate and manifest into more karmic debt. So when we don't address what's really going on within us, mentally, emotionally, physiologically, what's happening outside of us, when we don't really address it consciously, when we don't go after the problem with full responsibility and with a good, persistent, courageous heart saying, okay, let's deal with this. Let's look at it. No matter how big it is, how challenging it is, let's face it. When we push away from those things that are happening within and we try to find satiation out there, these seeds get planted. And life after life, we plant more and more of these seeds and they germinate and come up. And we call that karma. All these bad things are happening to me. I must have bad karma. Really, at the end of the day, Adam, bad karma just means you got a lot of stuff you haven't paid attention to, you haven't dealt with, you haven't really looked at clearly. And because of that, because you're trying to hide from it, you're trying to cover up with other external things, you're trying to run from it, you're trying to fight with it, because you're not willing to embrace it and deal with it, you're planting a huge garden. And that garden is sprouting up and there are weeds everywhere. So this is the cycle of karma, really.
So a direct question that probably has a really complicated answer, but that's what we're going to go for here. How does someone know when they have dealt with a karmic seed, when that weed has been pulled, I guess, for lack of a better analogy?
You just hit the nail on the head. That is one of the core principles of a good spiritual path, is to get rid of those underlying unconscious issues that we're not dealing with, that are way deep down, that we might not be able to see when we start the path, but eventually we want to get to them and pluck them up. We want to find out what is stopping me from living life as vivaciously as possible, as exuberantly as possible. What's stopping me from saying yes to everything, to being happy and being blissful, rather than me finding reasons in my mind about why I should be upset, mad, angry, depressed, have anxiety, etc. Something's happening underneath and I don't know what it is. The whole point of the path is to go down and find that stuff, dig it up, and get rid of it. And you will not be free or realized, as they use that term on the spiritual path, until you get rid of that stuff. Because once you get rid of it, there's no fear. If there's no fear, then you really live. You don't have to do anything. You don't need to do anything. You just want to do things, and you do them because it's life. And that's the point of the spiritual path, is to get to that place.
We transition somewhat clumsily here to the final part, which I think may be the biggest piece, which is when someone believes they've identified a karmic seed. We talked about the fact that you can fall into this trap of attaching narratives to it and then trying to fit your narratives towards your path, in that my neighbor is smoking hot and she meditates once in a while, this has got to be my soulmate, right? And then I'll look for reasons, even though we can list a myriad of reasons why it doesn't work, you know, whatever it is, you're incompatible, she's a horrible person, you know, a serial killer, who knows, but I'm still going to try to jam that narrative into my path to make it fit, because ultimately I just want this smoking hot neighbor, right?
That's creating more karma, right? Because again, what are you doing? You're not looking at it consciously. You're covering it up with egoic mind stream. You're making it fit whatever kind of unconscious life you want to live. And I really know this isn't the truth. I'm kind of duping myself, because it feels really good to lie to ourselves. It's much easier to lie to ourselves and to create stories and fantasies of the mind stream and to accept them from the awareness perspective than it is for us to really just say, okay, stop for a minute. Something's going on and I need to check this. I need to look at it and really take it on and figure out what's going on here. Because the woman is not going to satisfy. The man is not. The car is not. The job's not. None of that is really ever going to make me complete. I want to believe it is. I want to build stories. Hollywood makes billions of dollars, trillions of dollars on stories like this. And it's beautiful. It's great to think about. It's very heartwarming. But in reality, no thing outside of you is ever going to make or create your happiness. It's just not going to happen. And that's why we have a 53% divorce rate, because it's not meant to work that way. It's never going to work that way. We have to be happy first. Then we'll have a happy relationship with whoever we're with. It doesn't matter. But if we're going out to satiate that karmic seed, if we're going out to satiate that karma with something we believe is going to settle it outside of us, we're just creating more karma. We're fooling ourselves. It feels good for a moment, but it's not going to feel good long term.
I loved the word that you used with satiate, because that was the word that was on the tip of my tongue, because I feel like that's exactly what it is, trying to satiate impulses that are tied back to those karmic seeds, right? Trying to get another hit of that pipe or whatever it is, but spinning a completely different narrative about it. Okay, now this fits where I need to be. So I guess my question would be, someone who is strongly working at this path, is it fair to say that seeking out those things are not productive to moving forward?
It's productive if we're seeking them fully consciously, because then we're not really seeking them in the same way. But unfortunately, that's not where we're talking about the mass of the world. The world is seeking it unconsciously. Typically, we're trying to feel, like you said, we're satiating a hole. And that's the worst possible way you can ever do it, because you're just going to multiply. It's like you might as well till the soil over and throw a bunch of seeds down. They will come up eventually. They may not come up now. You may have a good relationship for a month or two, or a year or two, or five. At some point, your hands are on your head and you're crying, saying, why isn't this making me happy? And now I need to find something else. And this repetitive, you use the drug kind of cliche, but this drug abuse, this addiction, habitual addiction of seeking, is a terrible, messy thing. And if we don't find a way to get around that, we're going to continue to be in a miserable state. We're never going to have just happy. We're never just going to have peace or contentment. We're always going to need. And a needy person is not the kind of person you necessarily want to trust, because you know that they're working from an unconscious place that's all about them. How can I even trust you with my own exposing myself, explaining myself, expressing myself, if I know that you're going to be the person that needs to fulfill these holes the way a drug addict would? You wouldn't put a crackhead in your house and say, watch my house this weekend. You'd have nothing left in there. And it wouldn't be the crackhead's fault. It would be your fault. In the same way, when we're seeking to fill this void within us through outside ways, outside sources, we're just like a drug addict. It's the same thing. It's acceptable because everybody does it.
So someone who is intentionally moving along this path and they are trying to tackle these karmic seeds, how can they then really make any decision that deals with whatever issues they may have had in the past? Because if they're not clear, is it fair to say there still would be some degree of attachment or some degree of entanglement relative to that initial narrative?
That's absolutely right. I mean, you know that when somebody actually starts the path, that they're going to make a tremendous amount of mistakes and they're going to be creating landmines that'll go off in the future. It's just part of it. You know, somebody could say, well, how can I stop creating karmic seeds altogether? I mean, I know that I have a lot that are going to come up, but how do I stop creating them? The fastest way to do that is to get yourself into a place where you can one taste through, where you literally stop falling into the mind. We've talked about that before. Because the moment I fall into the mind's narrative, I'm in trouble. Because the mind will convince you that it needs everything. It needs the job, the car, the wife, the husband, it needs the knowledge, the power, the influence. It needs everything. And you'll follow along and do whatever it says because it promises you happiness that never comes. So if we remove ourselves from mind and we're very present, at least, it may not be the greatest state because we call that ordinary awareness, but at least we stop creating the intense rebound suffering that comes with the karmic entanglement.
Is it full clarity? Is that the place where someone can make these decisions and know that they're coming from a pure place of love and I don't want to say enlightenment, but that was the word that popped in my head for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. Or are there degrees where you're safer maneuvering through these grounds if you have you're an adept or something to that effect?
The second part of that is correct. There's degrees to it. So the more that I stay away from mindstream, the more conscious I am. I'm still going to make mistakes. I'm still going to have misjudgments. The way that the outside world is playing with me will still catch me up because it's going to keep challenging me. But I'm going to have a little better clarity. I'm going to make better decisions. But the problem is that until I'm completely clear of this, I will have bumps and bruises. I'm going to say, boy, I missed that one big time. I really failed there. And it's okay. That's part of learning, as long as we kind of see it, know it, and get up and go. Make changes and try to use that as a way of getting away from mindstream, we're going to be fine. But at some point, as you mentioned, there is a clarity where mind is no longer an issue. And now you don't chase or seek anything unless it's a momentary desire that doesn't have any kind of entangled outcome. It doesn't matter. Like if I wanted to have a cheesecake, I could have it. If it turns out that I don't have it, it wouldn't make a bit of difference. And that sounds very paradoxical, because from the lower mind standpoint, you would say, well, that doesn't make sense. And why would you want it? Do you just stop wanting everything? Do you just give up on life? It's not like that. From a higher perspective, when we let go of the mind's filter and all of the mind's egoic kind of blah, blah, the kind of network talking, the kind of, like you said, narrative talking, there is a peaceful place above that. There's a wisdom above that. And that wisdom works in a little different way. It doesn't work in what I say like a binary way. It doesn't work in a ones and zeros kind of way. Like it has to be this or it has to be that. There's a middle way that opens up there. And that middle way is a totally different way of seeing and perceiving reality. Your intention becomes more for others and less for you gradually until there is no you there. It becomes more for the world, the things around you, the people around you, than it does for you as you thin out and disappear. And eventually, as we say in realization, you're gone. There's no you in the equation. Of course, that's very, again, paradoxical and illogical, but that's really what happens. You go away. And then it doesn't really matter what's going on because there's no one there to complain or to need from it.
I guess this is a good time for your final thoughts about karma and the risk of a practitioner dealing with karmic seeds attaching to narratives or stories.
I would say simply this. The minute that I want something, the minute I need to have something, that's where the trouble starts. Because in truth, we shouldn't need to have anything. My state should be good, regardless if I have something or not. I should dictate how I'm living, how I'm feeling, how I'm sensing. It should never be predicated by something outside of me. If it's predicated to something outside of me, then I am just a robotic machine. That if the outside world shows me A or B, and A is good and B is bad, I'm going to go for A. And if that's the case, I'm nothing more than a farm animal. It's just directing me. It's showing me things and I'm running toward it. It's showing me other things, I'm running from it. The moment that I dictate my state within, that's the moment karma stops because the egoic neediness is gone. Now, does this happen intellectually? No, it doesn't happen intellectually at all. It's not a decision we can make. It's something we work on. There's many parts to it, but that is one of the initiate side of the path. It's working through this kind of understanding that I want to be in control of how I feel and how I perceive and not my neediness little ego body. And that's a big part of that initiation path is to get through that or at least start to put your hands on the reins and start to steer for yourself. And regardless of what challenge shows up in our lives, we can say, I'm not going to allow this to take away my happiness or my contentment. I refuse. I don't care how bad it is. And that's where we start to take control and lose karma, get rid of karmic seeds, and we become free of creating new karmic seeds.
Before we end tonight, I wondered if you had anything new or anything you wanted to talk about as far as anything on treasuryad.com that was going on.
Oh, we're doing 3 retreats in the fall. We're packed already with them. It's been great. It's a big family in there. We have a great time. If anyone's interested and listening to this and wants to come and be around a bunch of great adepts, you're welcome to join and use my name, R-A-Z, Raz, as the member referrer if you're interested. And we'll help you get through this muck. But either way, it's really important just to take stock in what's going on and to really look at yourself and say, hey, why am I doing these things? Am I sleeping through this decision? Do I think this is going to satisfy me if I chase this or get this or do that? Start to look at that. That will begin to wake you up. And it doesn't have to be anything more than that. Just start watching. The watching leads to wakefulness. The wakefulness leads to the path. The path leads to realization. And realization is the dawning of a new kind of way, a new kind of wisdom, a new way of perceiving the world.
Wonderful. Ross, thank you so much for your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Please rate and review on iTunes. That absolutely helps us get this message out. We will talk to you next week, and we look forward to that.
If you have enjoyed this podcast and wish to find out more information on these teachings, please come and visit us at our website, drukama.com. That's drukama.com.